I encourage you to open your Bibles to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 7. Begin reading with verse 11 and read about Jesus raising a young man from the dead. Luke chapter 7, beginning with verse 11. Soon afterward, he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. As he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And the dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all. And they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has arisen among us, and God has visited his people." And this report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country. Now, Lord willing, I want to focus our attention around four things in this text and one thing that is suggested by this text. First of all, Jesus and the woman. Secondly, Jesus and the young man. Thirdly, Jesus and the crowd. And then fourthly, Jesus and death. I've been friends with David and Debbie Parks, godly people, David a wonderful preacher, for most of my life. And I asked Debbie many years ago, they've been married for probably 45 or 50 years. I asked Debbie many years ago, "How did you know that David was a man that you wanted to marry?" And David was a young preacher, very talented, and her dad was a pastor of the Thompson Road Baptist Church in Lexington, Kentucky. And her dad had invited David to come and preach a revival service meeting for the Thompson Road Baptist Church. And he arrived and came to the Hamilton house early. Debbie was a Hamilton before she married David. And so here's nice-looking young lady, nice-looking young preacher. I'm sure that there were some hopes that things might work out here, but nothing for sure. But so I asked Debbie, how did you know that you wanted to marry David? She said, "Well, that first night that he came to the house, we had a bird feeder in the backyard, and he was watching the birds. And it just occurred to me, this man has a tender heart. He's concerned about the birds." That may be a small thing, but when you're kind of looking for a good excuse to move in that direction anyway, a small thing can encourage you to keep going that way. I've used that illustration as an opening illustration for preaching from the fact that God feeds the birds and what that says about God's character, that he cares for little things like the birds. And I'm using it as an opening illustration for this sermon because I want to lead you to think about the nature of Jesus' miracles and the purpose of his miracles. Now, some of the miracles were surely to authenticate his message and his mission. So I have told you several times before that there are three epics of concentrated miraculous activity that we read about in the Bible. Three. There is the days surrounding Moses, There are the days surrounding Elijah and Elisha, and then there are the days surrounding Jesus and the apostles. And I have told you when I mentioned that these all three were times when God was sending new revelation from heaven, and that the purpose of the miracles was at least partly to authenticate the message and the messengers who were delivering the message. We don't have to wonder about that. It tells us in Hebrews chapter 2 that God himself confirmed the testimony of Jesus with signs and miraculous gifts that were given according to his will. So without doubt, one of the primary purposes of the miraculous activity in the life of Christ, as well as Elijah, Elisha, and Moses, was to authenticate their message and to authenticate him or them as messengers from God. But I believe that there is a second purpose, and it's related to my opening illustration about Debbie observing that David was a tender-hearted man because he cared about the birds. The second purpose is that the miracles of Jesus revealed his character. So the miracles were not merely to authenticate his message, but they were also to reveal his character. And I think that the miracle that we're about to consider is one of those miracles. But you know how that works out. Perhaps there has been someone that you admired, and then you found out something about that person that seemed to ruin everything that you had previously admired about them. In Shakespeare's plays, Hamlet, there's a scene where Ophelia, who had been Hamlet's girlfriend, returns to him some gifts. And she says something like, "Rich gifts wax poor when those who gave them prove unkind." You've probably experienced that. Maybe you've gotten a gift from a boyfriend who turned out to be a scoundrel, and then you didn't want the gift anymore. It reminded you of the scoundrel. Or you received a gift from someone who at the time you had a good relationship, but then the relationship is destroyed, and that destroys your perspective on that relationship. I think I like Elvis Presley better because he would sometimes just buy strangers a Cadillac. You know, I think that shows Elvis was a nice guy. I don't want to read any books that were written by Ravi Zacharias. What came out about him after his death just means, yeah, he was a great apologist, but I just don't know if he was sincere about all that stuff. I'm not the judge of Ravi Zacharias, but you know, the illustration is, you find out things about someone and it influences the way that you think about them. So maybe there is a celebrity or an athlete that you have admired, and then you find out that this is someone who is really kind to people. He helps people. And you think, well, I just like him all the better for that. He's not helping me, but I like him because of that. And then you hear about another actor or actress who everybody thought was clever and funny, and then you find out that everyone who worked for her hated her, and you think, I don't want to watch her programs anymore. I don't want to watch his programs anymore. That's almost inescapable that there are certain events, there are certain actions that reveal someone's character. Now, you know, when God sent Moses to liberate the children of Israel, he empowered him to work a couple of miracles. And these were miracles that never did anybody any good. So there was the miracle of you can throw your stick on the ground and it will become a snake. And then there was a miracle that you could put his hand inside his cloak, he brings it out, and it's terribly diseased with leprosy. And then he puts it back in his cloak and pulls it out, and it's restored clean and whole again. Well, those are impressive miracles, and they were to authenticate Moses as God's messenger. But what good did it do anybody that a stick turns into a snake? What good did it do anyone that his hand could now you see it, now you don't. Most all of the miracles that Jesus performed were not like that. I didn't take a careful catalog of the miracles to make sure that what I'm about to say is true. You may be able to think of something, but the only miracle that I could think of that never did anybody any good was his cursing the fig tree. But maybe you can think of some others, and you can tell me after the service. But for the most part, he wasn't making a green tree turn purple and saying, see what I can do? Virtually all the miracles were miracles that also demonstrated something about his character. It authenticated him, but they also demonstrate something about his character. I think that this miracle is one that is very powerfully revelatory about the character of Jesus. If you look at this story right, and you're not predisposed to dislike Jesus, then I think that after thinking this through, you will think, I like him. He is nice. Although to say that it was nice for him to raise this young man from the dead is like saying the biggest ruby in the world's a pretty red rock. I mean, it's just to say that it was nice or that it was considerate or that it was gracious, it doesn't begin to come close to what it must have meant to this woman. So Jesus and his disciples, and there is a great crowd that is with him, they are going towards a little town called Nain. And according to what I've read, Nain is on a hill. And so they are going up the hill towards Nain. They're getting close to the city gate, and they meet a funeral procession coming out of Nain. So the funeral procession is coming downhill towards the burial ground that is there in the valley. Still can be located. It's still there, located. Nain is a ruin, but the graveyard is still there. And so Jesus sees this sad procession, and he sees this woman. In fact, I have this passage memorized in the New International Version, and it's pretty clear the three things that happen here with Jesus and the woman. It says, when Jesus saw her, that's the first thing. Secondly, his heart went out to her, that's the second thing. And he said to her, don't cry. So let's think about these three things of Jesus and the woman. First of all, he saw her. Now, this could be just a simple declarative sentence that, you know, how am I going to proceed with this story unless I describe that Jesus actually laid eyes on this woman? But I'm going to spiritualize it a little bit here and say that when you are sad or when you are in trouble, you may be sure that Jesus sees you. There may be times when you feel like nobody knows and nobody understands, and it may be true. The book of Proverbs talk about how there is a sorrow that a person feels and no one else understands it, and there's a joy that a person feels and no one else understands it. But you may be sure that in your saddest day, when so sad thou canst not sadder, Jesus sees you. And Jesus not only saw this woman, but then it says, secondly, his heart went out to her. Jesus never coldly reasoned, well, of course, death is in this world. It's a result of human rebellion. And it's too bad, but I can't go around raising everybody from the dead. After all, this is God's righteous curse upon a rebellious world. That's not the way Jesus reasoned. Jesus felt sorry for this woman. His heart went out to her. She was a widow, which means that her husband had died, and this was her only son. She may have had a daughter, But I'm assuming that probably this was her only child and she was left desolate. And the heart of Jesus knew and felt her pain, and his heart went out to her. The way the ESV puts it is that it says he had compassion on her. That word compassion is from to a root come, which means with, and passion, which means feeling. He had compassion on her. He felt with her. The same word is essentially the same word as our word sympathy. Sim meaning with, and pathos feeling. He had sympathy for her. He felt with her. But I like the way the NIV puts it. His heart went out to her. Some of you remember an old hymn that was sung many years ago. Does Jesus care when I've said goodbye to the dearest to me on earth? And my sad heart aches till it nearly breaks. Is it aught to him? Does he care? And then the chorus answers, oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is touched with my grief. When the days are dreary and the long nights weary, I know that my Savior cares. And this tells us that that's the kind of person that Jesus is. He doesn't always raise dead people on this earth. More about that later when I get to Jesus in death. But you may be sure that Jesus cares. He cares so much that he left the realms of glory so that he might come and go through what the justice and holiness of God required must be done if sinners who are dead in trespasses and in sins, dead in trespasses and in sins, are to be reconciled to God. Every fiber of his being, every moment of his life said, I do care. His heart goes out to us. So he saw the woman, and he sees you. His heart went out to her, and his heart goes out to you. And then he spoke to her. He saw her, his heart went out to her, and he spoke to her. And he said something that may sound a little absurd. He told her, don't cry. Do not weep, he says. Well, what kind of a thing is that to say to a widow who has just lost her only son? Don't cry. Of course she's going to be crying. I saw something this past week on a television series that Carol and I were watching that I think sheds light on this. So in this program that we were watching, there was a woman who had been badly treated by a man, badly treated, and she was crying about it. And there was a young girl who was close to the woman who had also been badly treated by a man. And in the scene that I'm remembering, this young girl put her forehead against the forehead of the woman who was crying. In frustration and anguish and sorrow and helplessness, she puts her forehead against the head of this woman who was crying, and the girl says, shh, shh, shh. That's kind of like what Jesus is saying here. I know you're sad, but I'm fixing to do something about it. I think there had to be that note in there. Don't cry. And maybe some twinkle in his eye. I mean, it's dangerous to start imagining this stuff, but it obviously wasn't a stupid thing for him to say to her. There was something about the way that he said it that made it compassionate and that made it wise and hopeful. And he says to her, don't cry. Now let's turn our attention from Jesus and the woman to Jesus and the young man. It says in verse 14 that he came up and touch the beer, B-I-E-R. For some of you, that may be the first time you've ever read that word beer. So I want you to think about some of the Middle Eastern funeral processions that you have seen. Sometimes the dead person is being carried on a little platform, sort of like a cot, so that the person may be wrapped up, but there's definitely a person there. The person may not be wrapped up, and they're just carrying the dead body out to the grave. And maybe there's a crowd of people who are weeping and wailing. That little platform that they're carrying him or her on is a bier, B-I-E-R. So it's not like a coffin or a casket that's closed in. So Jesus can see this young man. And they're carrying him out to the graveyard. And then, to me, this is so powerful. I mean, there are just a couple of really powerful things here. It says, he came up and he touched the bier, and the bearer stood still. Now, I can just imagine that there's a whisper that goes through both crowds. There's a crowd with Jesus. There's a crowd that's coming with the widow out of Nain, a funeral procession. These two crowds meet, and the crowd with Jesus knows who he is. And I can imagine that quickly there was a whisper that went through the crowd with the woman. That's the prophet. That's the prophet. That's Jesus. Oh, really? I've wanted to see him. Yes, that's the prophet. And so I can imagine that when Jesus touched that bier and those carrying it stood still, I can imagine that there was a real quiet hush that fell over the congregation. Sort of like what happened this morning when Jim Bob stood up here and you could tell that he was getting ready to speak and all the chit-chat in the congregation got quiet. He's getting ready to say something. And I can imagine this quiet hillside. Suddenly here are hundreds, maybe thousands of people who are gathered around these pallbearers who have stopped. And Jesus is very near to the corpse because he's touched the bier. And then he says in verse 14, "Young man, I say to you, arise." Now, in all three of the resurrections that we read about Jesus performing, and we read the other two as part of our first and second scripture readings, all three times Jesus speaks to the deceased person. He speaks to the dead person. Little girl, he says to Jairus' daughter, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." He stands outside the tomb of Lazarus. "Lazarus, come out." And now he's talking to a dead man. And he says, "Young man, I say to you, arise." Now you've got to take this into account as you think about what happens when people die. They can still hear Jesus. I don't know if they can hear you. I don't know if they can hear me. I go and visit the graves of my mom and my dad, and sometimes I just stand there and I don't know what to say. I feel like I want to show respect to my mom and dad. And I usually will just get down on my knees, maybe even get down on my face, say, "Lord, thank you for giving me such a good mom and dad. I don't know what to say. I don't. There's nothing in the Bible that would indicate that they can hear me. But look at what Jesus says. He says, "I say to you." Well, that's different. "I say to you." I, the one who said, "Let there be light," and there was light. The one who said, "Let there be darkness," and light to divide the day from the night. The one who cast the stars out into the sky and created the sun and the moon. You know I'm talking to you. I say to you, young man, get up. And he did. He listened. He heard Jesus. And he obeyed. And then I love this. At the end of verse 15. Well, we got to see this first. The dead man sat up and began to speak. We don't know what he said. None of the people who were raised from the dead in the Bible ever said anything that's recorded in the Bible. I'm sure that they talked and went on and had normal lives for a while, but we don't hear anything about what Lazarus said after that. We don't have anybody who comes back from the dead to tell us what it's like to be dead, except Jesus. And he comes back from the dead and he tells us everything that we need to know about it. So this young man sat up, he began to speak. That was evidence that he was really raised from the dead. This wasn't just a post-mortem twitch that he was having. He sat up and he began to talk. And then, I love this, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Oh, what a moment that would have been. This woman who thought that she would never again get to hold her son or talk to her son or be with her son, and then Jesus gives him back to his mother. Now, you know, there are times when somebody dies, and even if you loved them, you say things like, well, he was old. He had a good life. He was ready to go. I'm glad he's not suffering. You say all those things. But almost nobody says those things about a child who dies. You don't think, well, she had a good life. He experienced a lot of joyful things. It just seems so wrecked. It just seems so not right that this child of mine is dead. How can it be? Well, you heartbroken mother, you heartbroken father, who, as I say that, think back on memories that just cause your heart to break and maybe your eyes to weep. I want you to hear this. Jesus gave the boy back to his mother. And if your child was a follower of Jesus, and if you're a follower of Jesus, then I believe that there is a happy reunion one day. And one way or another, Jesus is going to give your child back to you. In heaven, in a place where there will be no more sickness, in a place where there will be no more death, no more parting. Jesus and the woman. He saw her, his heart went out to her, he spoke to her. Jesus and the young man. He spoke to him and raised him from the dead and gave him back to his mother. And now Jesus in the crowd. Fear seized them all, verse 16 says. They were filled with wonder. I don't think that they were afraid that Jesus was going to do something bad to them. I think that they just were just so flabbergasted by this that it caused them to come unglued. And I hate to be so mundane about it, but some of you guys who have gotten buck fever and you've seen that big buck and you weren't really afraid, but you just got so scared that you couldn't even pull your bow back. Or there's something else that may have happened to you, but that's the thing that springs to my mind. That it's not a fear of, I'm afraid that he's going to hurt me. It's just like, what is going on here? They were filled with wonder. And then the crowd got some things right. They glorified God, which is what they ought to have done. And they said, a great prophet has arisen among us. They were right. A great prophet had arisen among them. And then they said, God has visited his people. And they were right. They weren't saying that Jesus is God, so they never went far enough, but they were right as far as they went. Only God can raise the dead. God clearly has authorized this man to raise the dead. God has come and has visited his people. And then finally, let's turn our attention to Jesus and death. You Bible readers will know that death is a common metaphor for the spiritual condition into which we have entered as a result of our rebellion against God. It's the way that God himself described it when he was warning Adam and Eve against disobedience. He said, "In the day that you eat from the tree that I tell you not to eat from, you will surely die." And though Adam and Eve did not die physically that day, they began to die physically, and they died spiritually that day. So spiritually, they encountered the same sort of things that we encounter when a loved one of ours has died. There is a separation between the dead and the living. That day, when Adam and Eve died, and all of their posterity that descends from them by ordinary generation was represented by Adam and Eve, then the entire human race, with the exception of Jesus, was plunged into a state of separation from God. Dead in trespasses and in sins. And just like when a loved one of ours dies, we have to do something with the body because it's going to become increasingly obnoxious. You can't just leave it alone. You've got to bury it. You've got to burn it. You've got to do something, or that body is going to be, it's not going to get better. And that's the case of spiritual death as well. Dead in trespasses and in sins. You're separated from God as the dead are separated from the living, and you are not going to get better. There's only one thing that can make a dead person live, and that's the power of God. And that's true physically, and that's true spiritually. Now, there was a time when I was 14 years old. It was 1975. God willing, this June, I will mark my 50th anniversary of being a follower of Jesus. That was 50 years ago in June of 1975. I was 14 years old, and I was walking down the hill from Nain, and I was heading for the graveyard. And then I just kind of wish I was a black preacher right now. And then Jesus came along. Yeah, that's right. And then Jesus came. And he touched the beer. Now, this miracle, nobody said, "Hey, Jesus, why don't you help this woman out?" There are some miracles where a person gets healed because he says, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." He pleads for himself. There are other times, like the centurion's servant that we studied last week, that he says, "Please come and heal my servant." But then there are a few instances where nobody asks for it. And this is one of those instances. And that's the way it was in that June day of 1975. The night before, my friend and I had camped out, and we had secured some alcohol, and neither our parents would permit us to drink alcohol, and we got alcohol with the intention of drinking it, and honestly, it was just tasted so nasty we couldn't do it. But we hid it away because we thought we'll drink it later. And so we camped out that night. I came in that morning to the house and just going through a regular Saturday morning, and then I hear Mom and Dad talking in the living room. And some of the pieces are starting to slide into place. Some of the pieces that were started before the foundation of the world when God determined that he was going to raise me from the dead. But then he put me in a godly family. And I had all those loving embraces and kisses and all those things that make me eager and willing to listen to somebody And my mom and dad were talking about Jesus, and just from the first moment that I could understand anything, I was hearing the gospel. But I was dead. And my heart was in rebellion against that. And then there were Bible school teachers and Bible study teachers and experiences at camp and this and that. And there are all these pieces of the puzzle that are moving towards that day in June of 1975. And I was not aware of all of these behind-the-scenes puzzle movements that are going on. I was dead. But that morning, I heard my mom and dad speaking in low tones. And you know, when you're in rebellion against your mom and dad, you dread those conversations. You're afraid for them to come in your room. You're afraid for them to look under your mattress. You're afraid for them to look in the pockets of your jacket. And that's the way I'd been living for several months. And there's just this puzzle piece that is screeching across the board. And they called me into the living room and they confronted me with what they had heard about me. And I affirmed that it was true. And I walked out into that June afternoon. And I said, God, I don't know if I'm saved or lost. But if I'm lost, save me. And if I'm saved, help me to look like it. And then Jesus touched that beer. And he said, young man, I say to you, get up. I got up. I started to talk. I haven't stopped talking since. But I'm telling you, I'm alive today because Jesus touched me. And you are too if you're alive. And if you ever hope to have spiritual life, it will be because Jesus touches you and raises you from the dead. Now the meal that we're about to celebrate this morning commemorates what Jesus has done to raise the dead. I'm not the only person that he raised from the dead. He's raised millions and millions of people from the dead. And he did it by sacrificing his body and shedding his blood. And as we take the Lord's Supper today, we are remembering that. And so you deacons who are going to help with dispersing the elements of the Lord's Supper, be making your way up here.